It is hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. We pick out the stems and seeds at 2:45. The Falcons are trying to trade Julio Jones. We tell you some of the teams in the mix for his services. At 2:30, why does May 20th matter? A day that requires me to ask Chad a question that will most certainly make him squirm. In mere minutes, it's part of my Books on Pod chat with hip-hop artist Caleb Quali. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. We'll get right into that interview here after I tell you the lead is -3 at the PGA Championship. Keegan Bradley and Brooks Koepka are a couple of the guys there, and Jordan Spieth is out on the course, -1 through -3. We'll keep you updated on that. Tim Tebow is a Jacksonville Jaguar. That's official as well. All right, Trey, let's get in here. Talib Kweli has written a book.
New book is Vibrate Higher. You can check out this full conversation at booksonpod.com. The episode came out this morning, and here is part of my chat with the New York-based MC. You also got Dave Chappelle to basically take over the end of that album, speaking of collaborations. And, of course, you were among the performers at Chappelle's block party, the legendary block party in 2004. What was it like getting to take part in that?
I met Chappelle years before he jumped on the Quality album. I met Chappelle over a couple of different times. But when I was working on the Reflection Eternal album with High Tech, I saw him walking down the street in Greenwich Village. And I invited him to the studio. And it was inviting him to the studio that we really cemented our friendship, because he was enamored with the music we were doing. And everyone you see in Block Party was working in Electric Lady on albums at that time. So Block Party was just like an extension of those earlier Electric Lady sessions.
And amongst those performers, of course, were the Roots. Black Thought is my favorite MC of all time. How cool is it getting to work with the Roots from time to time, just considering how brilliant they are, from the instrumentation to the raps that Black Thought drops? Obviously, you mentioned in the book that Questlove is like your internet godfather. Just how cool is it to be friends with those dudes?
Yeah, I mean, Black Thought is my favorite MC as well. Me and him are born the same day. I consider him my mentor, my OG, but also my peer. I cannot overstate how important the Roots are to my career. From OK Player to everything they've done for me, it's just impossible for me to overstate what the Roots mean to me. I feel like I'm a member of the group. That's how much love they show for me. And you know, I love them dudes immensely.
Why do you consider Questlove your internet godfather?
Because Questlove is the first person who was like, you need to get on Twitter. Questlove is the guy who tries to convince all of us artists who are very analog to step up our digital game. He's always been like that. That's why he created OKPlayer.com.
In chapter 29, you talk about how active you were on Twitter at the time and defending how often you went after people expressing various forms of ignorance. Of course, since that chapter was written, Twitter decided to ban you from life, and I don't necessarily care to get into the details of that. I'm curious, though, have you felt a positive difference since detaching yourself from what my friend so accurately called at one point a virtual bathroom wall, which does include glory holes from time to time?
I like that, a virtual bathroom wall. I want to push back a little bit against the way in which you framed the question, because I feel like the way in which you framed the question is easy to make that mistake, but that's part of the reason why people feel gleeful in my suspension from Twitter. I've never, ever, ever went after anybody. That's not what I did. I would post my own opinions and post what's important to me, and people would come after me, and then I would respond. And I think the story surrounding my Twitter experience too often unfairly is like Kweli is a troll that goes after people, because I was on there for so long. I was on there so often. I would respond to damn near everything. And I was on there so often that people mistake me responding to people as me going after people. Now, this might sound like cap, but I was planning to distance myself from Twitter before I got suspended. So I almost feel like the suspension was God stepping in and being like, no, 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 you're not going to distance yourself on your own. Let me go ahead and do it for you. I am not angry at Twitter. I'm disappointed in them because I enjoyed the experience, but it's their house. They have the right to kick me out for whatever reason. They don't even have to justify it. They don't have to tell me. I disagree with the reason why they kicked me out, but I understand it, because what I did to get kicked off of Twitter was definitely technically against the rules. I posted a screenshot of someone threatening to rape my daughter and assault my mother. And I neglected to cut off the phone number of the person who was calling me and making these threats and texting me these threats. So that became, and because people complain about me on Twitter all the time, that became an excuse for Twitter to kick me off. But I will say this, I enjoyed it. As much as I enjoyed it, I'm still here. You're still interviewing me, and people are not going to be talking about Twitter in 10 years, but they damn sure will still be talking about my output and my work.
Well, one of the interesting things about how you used to defend yourself and respond to people who were replying to what you were initially posting is that you were doing so as yourself. And part of the problem with social media and the internet as a whole, I guess, is just the veil of anonymity that people get to operate under. And they get to say and do these truly ugly, hateful, negative things and not necessarily have to face any sort of consequences for it either.
Well, I mean, isn't that what the internet is for a lot of people? I mean, I think that's where I do get caught up at, is sometimes I expect people to operate with the same level of accountability and transparency that I feel the need to operate under. And because I've put myself out there as a conscious rapper or a positive rapper, right, people will be more pressed to find flaws and holes in what I do. And because this is what happens with conscious artists, people who are not conscious, we sometimes make them uncomfortable, whether it's our intention to or not. Just by the nature of what we do, we remind people of what they're not doing positively. And so what people sometimes do is they try to overhold us accountable. They'd be like, well, I can't slack on these bars. Every bar got to be uplifting. Every bar got to be positive. I can't get caught out there, no drama. I can't make a mistake. I can't be a human being because I represent myself as a quote unquote conscious, positive artist. I accept that. So my whole thing is, look, I have no problem with you holding me over accountable for every single little thing. I got no issue with that because I asked for it, right? But I'm gonna do the same thing back to you. So if you come to me and you try to hold me accountable because you didn't like a tweet or you didn't like a song lyric or you didn't like that I supported Black Lives Matter, whatever the problem you have with me that you're trying to hold me accountable for, I'm going to defend myself, but I'm also going to turn around and hold you accountable for the things I see you doing. And I think that's where I get into the problem, because people are not used to that.
I enjoyed you describing several different encounters with Barack Obama when he was president, especially you taking your grandmother to meet him. Great story. Highly recommend people check the book out for a number of reasons, including that story. Your grandma, who was known as Mama or Toots, passed away a few years ago. What was the most valuable piece of wisdom that she imparted on you before then?
Woo! She told me a lot of things. The valuable piece of wisdom is to keep your family close. Always get up with your family, your immediate family. Spend holidays, get with them as much as you can. I laughed because I wasn't sure that I should share the most valuable information because I don't want to offend people. When she was passing away, one of the last things she said to me was, and I'm going to paraphrase, I'm not going to say exactly what she said, but I'm going to paraphrase. So be careful with falling in love. Be careful with love and attachment. Because she's like, I worked for the bank. She worked all these years and she spent all this time trying to be in these relationships and give her all and give so much love and be in love and be married and do all this. She said when she became an elderly person, she felt like she spent her life trying to please other people. And when she became an elderly person and started traveling more, she started to let go of some of those attachments that she felt like being in love made her hold on to. And I hesitate. I'm being careful how I state that because it could sound harsh if you haven't lived that life or hadn't lived certain experiences, or if you're someone who's currently head over heels in love, or if you're someone who's trying to make a relationship work against the odds right now. I don't want to discourage people from that because love is important too, but knowing my grandmother, knowing my life, for her to say that to me at that time in my life, it was just, it hit me like a brick. And it was advice that I needed to make sure that I'm taking care of myself and make sure that I'm not just doing things just for other people.
That makes total sense to me. I'm curious what her actual words were. If you were paraphrasing to try and be a little bit careful, what did she just straight up say? Love?
She was a little bit more blunt than the way
okay.
I put it.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't want to piss people off.
you talked about earlier in this conversation that you are a lover of books, have been for a long time. I'm a little bit jealous that when you were younger, you got to work in bookstores. That's something that, to go back in time, I wish I got to do a little bit more of, working at indie bookstores or something like that. So for you, as somebody who has obviously accomplished so much and put yourself out there creatively in a variety of ways, was it challenging at all to do so in book form, considering the high regard that you hold this medium?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If you watched me on Deaf Poetry Jam, I did it twice. And both times I'm extremely nervous, so much that you can see the nervousness on my face and hear it in my voice. And the reason why I was so nervous is because when I started my career, I was running around in the same circles as spoken word artists, but then I became a rapper for a living and I started writing in 16 bars and coming up with hooks and trying to get songs on the radio. And that became, if not more important, just as important as the content of my bars. But then when you're going up against actual writers like Sonia Sanchez and Jessica Caire Moore and people like that, it's like, well, these little rap bars standing up to what these spoken word artists are doing. And I had to check myself and I'm like, wow, did I really dip in my content? And I think the bars that I gave on Deaf Poetry Jam were good enough, but that was a lesson for me that, like, wow, okay, as a rapper, I understand the Jay-Z lyric about I dumb down to make dollars. It happens even when you don't mean for it to happen. So me throwing my hat into the literary ring, well, now I'm competing against Richard Wright and James Baldwin and Toni Morrison and Maya Angelou. And this is a whole different set of artists than other rappers. Other rappers I'm running laps around. But when it comes to the literary world, I'm the baby, I'm the novice, I'm the amateur. So I was very nervous. And part of the reason why I finished this book right before Trump got elected, but it took me a long time to even give it to the publisher because I was nervous about whether or not it was good enough.
One of the last paragraphs of this book, you lay out how different people taught you certain things, including Dave Chappelle teaching you how to live your truth. Now, Dave Chappelle is not only the greatest stand-up comedian of our lifetime, in my opinion, he is also, more importantly, one of the most important humanitarians of our lifetime as well. So how did he teach you how to live your truth?
Because Dave is unapologetic about his craft. But just because he's unapologetic and fiercely protective of his craft doesn't mean that he's not a great person. The things that he says in his comedy that are sometimes offensive to people, he's very clear that these are jokes and these are meant to be offensive and shocking, and often it's wrong. He's very clear to say, look, I'm not trying to be right on stage. I'm trying to be funny. And there's a huge difference. And I think he's very brave to sort of put himself out there for his fellow comedians. Like Dave says, he can say and do what he wants because he don't have to do the big budget movies. And he's very free. He's a revolutionary. Block Party, you brought Block Party up. That was very important. But just as what I do as an artist, as a rapper, I relate to what Dave does as a comedian. When I think about the community I come from, like when I think about like a battle rap community, it's not very PC. It's not very politically correct, and it's very toxic, but that's who I come out of. And I think that artists need the freedom creatively to be able to jump into those stews, figure out what works for them and what doesn't morally, and then develop their art. I don't think you can speak on it unless you participated in it. And from hanging out with Dave and seeing what happens in the comedy world, I understand why he feels the need to be shocking in order to protect the freedom of speech that comedians need to do their job. I don't agree with every premise of every Dave Chappelle joke, but I'm amazed that he can do that and he can still be Dave Chappelle, the stand-up citizen that he is. I'm currently in his hometown right now. The things he's doing in Yellow Springs, Ohio are amazing. And there's pushback from the local people here as well, but history is going to be on the side of Dave Chappelle.
Agreed with that, and I look forward to the podcast that you have coming out with he and Yasin on Luminosity. And you mentioned Chappelle and the movies. You and I are obviously both big fans of Half-Baked. You mentioned it in the book. But I was curious to learn, their initial premise for that movie was to make it more of a dark comedy. And, of course, Hollywood does what Hollywood does, and that's try to yuck it up a little bit more and turn it into more of a Cheech and Chong sort of premise. And, look, it still worked really well. It's a hilarious movie. I'm curious, though, what the dark comedy version of Half-Baked would have looked like. Have you ever talked with him about that?
This is the first time I've heard the words dark comedy in reference to that. But what I do know is that it's absolutely accurate that what Neil and Dave created is not what came out. And so when I speak to Dave about my love for Half Baked, it sort of stings because what I fell in love with is not what he intended it to be. But there's enough of him in it. I fell in love with that movie because the movie felt like a document. It felt like a slapstick, ridiculous caricature documentary of what my life was at that time. I was a pothead. I was going to bodegas. I was trying to figure out whether or not I should be selling weed in the streets and, you know, all that stuff. That's what I was, when he said, I used to buy weed from the dreads of Washington Square Park. I don't fall for that anymore. Like, that was a very, that's like, are you in my head? Do you live my life? You know what I'm saying? And so I didn't really know Dave that well when that movie came out. I met him, but I didn't know him. But that movie made me be like, okay, Dave Chappelle is a genius. But when Dave looks back at it, all he sees is what Universal did, or I don't know if it's Universal, but all he sees is what, I guess it was Warner Brothers? There's a lot of like Bugs Bunny stuff in there.
Including some of the music where there it really is slapsticky at times. Now, have you ever had a Scarface moment where you have to go, F you, you're cool, I'm out?
All the time. Shout out to Guillermo Diaz. I was just watching the reruns of Chappelle Show when he's like, wrap it up, B. Like, he bodied that Wrap It Up skit. He bodied Cuban B. The fact that his character's name is Cuban B is because he's a Cuban from New York that calls everybody B. That's just such a New York reference. He's like, yo, B, what up, B? His introduction in that movie is, he goes, I'm Cuban B. And then the great Clarence Williams says, yeah, Cuban B. It's so hilarious.
Oh, man. All right. Final question, Talib. Chapter 6 breaks down many of the prime candidates for a reputable top five dead or alive, or a person's five favorite MCs of all time. Who's in your top five dead or alive?
It's like I said, the reason I wrote that chapter is so I wouldn't have to answer this question. but it's like a revolving door because it changes all the time. That chapter is specifically written as my answer to that question. Because it's like, okay, well, if we're going to talk about top five, well, then from my personal experience and my perspective, because again, it's my perspective. My top five is based on where I grew up, how I grew up, when I grew up. And so based on my perspective, I got to give you the whole history. I got to tell you about how I was listening to Ice Cube and KRS-One and what Native Tongues did for me, and then what Kendrick and J. Cole did for me, and how much I love Gene Gray and Pharoah and what Black Thought means to me. And I have to tell you the whole thing.
Well, you said Black Thought may be your number one. So is there somebody else who is for sure on that list too?
Well, Black Thought is always on the list because he's the most consistent working MC. But the people who constantly make the list for me are definitely Most Def, Common, Nas, Jay-Z, Gene Gray, Pharoah Monch, Tupac, Biggie, Bun B, Scarface, Ice Cube. Those are the names that stay on the list. Rakim, Big Daddy Kane.
Yeah, Scarface is always on my list as well because he's the Bob Dylan of hip-hop, as you point out in that chapter. He just is such a great storyteller in that medium.
Yeah, Miss Hill. Can't forget Miss Hill.
All right, and there is half of my chat with Talib Kweli about Vibrate Higher. It's his new book. Check out the full thing at booksonpod.com, Chad.
All right, coming up, the PGA Championship continues at Kiowa. We'll get you a look at the leaderboard, including where Jordan Spieth is and how close he is to the lead. It's also May 20th. We'll talk about some of the best taunts in the history of sports. And apparently Trey has something that's going to gross me out. Stay with us. It's The Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
The new moon rode high in the crown of the metropolis, shining like who on top of this? People were sussling, arguing and bustling. Gangsters are God thumb, hardcore hustling. I'm wrestling with words and ideas. My ears prick, thinking what will translate.
All right. Not often do you interview an author and then play the music of the author, because most people that write books can't do this, but Talib Kweli can. Trey, the book is Vibrate Higher. That was good stuff. Full interview can be found where?
booksonpod.com, and this is actually a clip from Black Star, which was Talib Kweli and Most Def, and this song features Common. It's called Respiration.
That is a great album. That's another one of the, that's the album is called Black Star, right? Or is that the project is called Black Star?
Both,
okay.
Self-titled.
Yeah, that's another one. When Eddie got me into Talib Kweli, it was Quality, Black Star, and something else. There was another, I remember
Reflection
those two.
Eternal?
Maybe. That may have been the other one, yeah. But I do remember the Black Star stuff. That was really good. Good interview there with Talib Kweli. Some good. Twitter's not going to be here in 10 years, but they're going to still talk about me. That was good.
He may not be right about that.
I don't think he's right about that.
I mean, he's still going to be here in 10 years. Twitter is going to be too.
I know. I enjoyed the bravado of it, even if I don't completely agree with what he's saying. All right. The Specs text line is there for you. 337-3776. We've had comments coming in on that interview, comments coming in on the discussion from last hour with the NCAA having a little bit of a dispute with the LGBTQ community about athletics, about the championships, where they're holding some of their championships, that kind of stuff. Also, we're keeping you up to date on the PGA. We will check that leaderboard very quickly. And Jordan Spieth back to even par now through five. Scheffler in the clubhouse at even par. Fratelli is at plus one to hit the Longhorns there. And the lead is still at minus three. Names like Keegan Bradley, Victor Hovland, and Brooks Koepka have thrown 69s down for the people at the Kiowa course, and it is whipping the wind right there by the ocean. By the way, Trey, there's two main reasons I never want to play this golf course. Number one, the wind won't stop. And number two, oh my God, the bunkers at this golf course. I mean, when you're right on the ocean, you just basically take a bunker and eventually you just goes to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
It's some of the silliest bunkers I've ever seen watching this thing already today. And I really haven't had a chance to focus in and watch, but I think it's on number 13 or 14. I don't want any part of that.
Bunkers are the worst.
Oh, my God. They're just horrific. All right. So, got all that going on today. We also have May 20th and why it matters. Let's tell you. Here we go.
This hour brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialists. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Daniel Slaughter at Sinus and Snoring Specialists, 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com.
So before Trey grosses me out, today's the anniversary of Scottie Pippen doing that to Patrick Ewing. It is one of the great
27 years ago
sports taunt moments, really, ever, when he stood over Patrick Ewing and caused a little rough up, a little fight between the two teams. So we've been asking you for your favorite sports taunts. We pointed out that Longhorn fans, if you are a Longhorn fan like Trey, and I know many of you out there, you have to deal with an all-time sports taunt.
We're on the receiving end of the most consistent sports taunt.
It's out there. That upside-down Longhorn thing keeps coming back and coming back and coming back. So you have to have those. Now, Trey, to be fair to that discussion, one of our listeners' favorite taunts was the Cody Clemens. That would be a right-side-up Longhorn displayed to the Aggies during that regional or super-regional matchup. I can't remember which one it was.
And that may have been a response to the upside-down horns, too.
It may have been. I can't recall how all of that rolled out. I would not. In that era, I certainly wouldn't put that past the Aggie baseball players. Once they adopted it, it ran wild. Now, way back, they wouldn't have done it. But the Sooners basically invented it, and everybody went crazy after that. So that one's out there. So if you're a Longhorn fan, let us know what you think.
Did that not exist until like sometime in the last 20 years?
Yeah, I don't remember it until it didn't exist before 2000, really.
Wow.
I mean, I think the Sooners and the run against Mack Brown to me is where that was born.
Okay.
And I don't remember, and I didn't learn it. Nobody taught me that growing up. Never, not one time at an A&M football game did I see anybody do that.
Mm.
And I mean, come on. I mean, there's something instructional there's a camp you go to where they instruct you on all the Aggie stuff.
We're in your song. So the fact that that wasn't taught speaks to it not being around.
Yeah, it would have been there, you would think. And that was, I go to college in 93 and I was out in 96, 97 era. And so it had to be at least 2000 to me. When it showed up. So give us some of your favorite taunts. I'll give you a good one in basketball. Somebody said Mutombo. That's a great one. Even though they didn't win the series, they didn't even come close. But the Allen Iverson stepping over to Ron Lue, I enjoyed that one. That was a good taunt.
Oh, yeah.
Like he nailed that three and then just steps over the kid. That was pretty cool.
That's a good call.
Basketball's got a lot of great ones, and that is easily one of my favorites.
Baseball has some good ones, too. Usually involves a pitcher showing up a hitter or vice versa.
Yeah.
Almost always leads to a fight or a fastball to the back.
Yeah, and see, I dig all that stuff. I don't want anybody to get hit in the head or anything, but I don't mind it. Big enough moment, you can bat flip, you can throw a bat. I'm the Ranger fan that'll say Joey Bats can do whatever he wants in that moment. That was a huge home run. You want to get mad at him and Odor punch him? Now, that was a fun moment, too, But I wasn't mad at Batista because he just did that. He just went scoreboard on my team. I think you have a little right to go. And then here's another one I like, Trey. They need to let this happen more and more and more. College baseball right now. Oh, I love the energy in college baseball. Pitchers will scream at the other dugout. Mm-hmm. Batters losing their minds when they hit home runs or big doubles or something. When a guy gets to second and he's knocked in a big run, all that stuff. Remember the Rangers teams of ours that used to do the weird antlers and claws and all of that? I love that stuff. That's all taunting.
Football taunts include T.O. in the middle of the star.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I hated that moment, that's an all-timer.
At Old Texas Stadium, how about Randy Moss in Green Bay?
Yeah.
The fake moon.
Yeah, and he rubbed his backside on the goalpost.
Yes, he did.
That was great. That was so good. I love that one. I love stuff to the crowd. Like anytime a long and again, the one the Longhorn crowd will get is they'll get some upside down Longhorns from time to time. But my group had to eat one a couple years ago, and I'll admit it was pretty cool. Kelly Bryant of Clemson scored a touchdown. He put both his thumbs out, and then he went thumbs down in Kyle Field.
That's a good one.
He did it in the corner where Clemson's fans sit.
Oh, that's less good.
So it's kind of both, but obviously a lot of folks had to deal with that. And he didn't get flagged. I like that. Because we've seen dumb flags on the taunting over the years.
Oh, college football gets ridiculous
right,
with that.
Let's not go through all of those where we've actually seen Longhorn players get taunted for giving the hook'em horns to their own crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Vince Young get flagged for that one time. Mike Jones, the tight end, wasn't that his name? Mike Jones?
Mm-hmm.
He got flagged for that one time. It's like, what are you doing? He's celebrating to his own fans, and you're flagging the guy. But, yeah, that is a great part of it. Anything Larry Bird, says one of our texters, especially winning the three-point contest. Oh, my God. Remember that one? When he took the last shot and then threw the number one up in the air? The ball hadn't even gone in yet?
Yeah.
That's a taunt.
Yep.
That's it. That was a great night. I hated Larry Bird, and I hated the Celtics, but he threw that finger up, and that ball went in, and I thought, man, you know what, Lair? That's on you. Good for you.
I love the slow up at the goal line. And wait for the defenders to catch up with you before you walk into the end zone.
What about the backflip into the end zone? Slow up, turn around, and backflip?
That's pretty badass.
Somebody brought this up earlier. It is an all-timer. Marshawn Lynch against the Saints. Considering how good a run it was, and then to turn around and jump backwards into the end zone while grabbing the business, it's one of the best ever.
Skittles.
Dude, that is one of the best celebrations and taunts ever.
All right, I'm going to try and make you squirm a little bit.
All right.
Real quick before the break.
I almost got to the break. What
Cher's birthday today, Chad.
Yes.
You are required to cross-dress.
Okay.
For a RuPaul-style drag party.
Okay.
And you have to dress up like somebody famous.
Okay, I have to pattern my look after somebody.
One of the standards, one of the cross-dressing standards from the world of music or acting or whatever else.
Oh,
who are you going with?
Oh, it can't just be random. It's got to be somebody.
No, you got to dress up, I mean, like Cher. Cher is one of the all-timers.
I have to pick an icon. Okay, all right. If I have to cross-dress, who's the badass blonde bombshell in that world? Who is it? Is there a blonde? I feel like it needs to be. I feel like I'd want to be a blonde.
The two that come to mind, and I'm not an expert here, are Madonna.
Yeah,
and
I'm gonna be a Madonna guy.
Lady Gaga.
Ooh, I'd go. I could go more Lady Gaga than Madonna. That's a pop. What about Elvira? Could I go a little gothy? Does that count? Does Elvira count as an icon?
Yeah, I think that could count.
All right, let's go pale because I'm already kind of pale. Let's go pale. Big, busty, scary brunette. That's what I'll do.
Okay.
Elvira. Chad Vira. That'll be my plan. Elvira, and I'll have them play the Oak Ridge Boys song when I walk in the door. Oompa Mau Mau. It'll be awesome.
Okay.
I'd be a terrible cross-dresser.
All right.
Because you can't be a good... Well, this is what I don't... Here's what I don't know in the cross-dressing world. My daughter and wife enjoy watching RuPaul's Drag Race. RuPaul is an attractive man to start with. RuPaul's a handsome man to begin with, and then RuPaul is an attractive, you know, cross-dressing character, or cross-dressed character, if you will. What I don't know is if you take a guy like me and turn me into a cross-dressing character, does it get better? Like, I'm just an average-looking dude. Can you take average me and make me into a pretty drag queen? Because I think I'd just be kind of an average blah-looking drag queen.
Well, we could hide your ears with the right wig.
I don't know. Maybe. But you couldn't hide the nose.
The nose is a problem.
I mean, the nose is there.
Well, that's where it takes somebody who's really good with makeup.
Okay.
To distract from the nose.
You'd have to find
to make the nose look smaller because you're accentuating the cheekbones or the lips
know.
Or something else.
I don't know if it'd work, but I'll go with Elvira. I'll go the Elvira Mistress of the Dark look.
All right.
I always liked her back in the day. Be an insult to the Elvira legacy is what it would be. But that's where I'd go.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, you are not going to look as good as the original.
No. But if you could just give me a sense of the Elvira cleavage. That was always great. She had some of the best cleavage on television. Here's how good her cleavage was, Trey. I would tune in for those movies just to watch her go in and out of the break. I would time it to where I wasn't even watching the movie. I would watch like The House That Bled to Death. I've never seen a scene of the movie, but I've seen everything she did. I'd record it on the VCR and just go to her.
Was that Up All Night?
Up All Night with Elvira. Exactly. Oh, my God. She looked incredible back in the day. All right. There's why May 20th matters. That didn't gross me out that much.
I didn't say gross you out. I said squirm.
A little squirm.
And it did make you squirm a little bit.
It's going to make everybody else squirm if I have to go drag queen. The worst part of that is I'm not a clothes person either way. I'm not big into clothes.
Oh, I see. Well,
so I would have to get some lessons on just how to deal with clothes, how to put stuff on, and I would need a full clothes and makeup team, man. I couldn't do any of it.
Well, here's where you gain some points back with people who see you in drag for the very first time. Those calves in 5-inch stilettos.
You think that would work?
It's going to play well.
The nose doesn't play, but the calves do.
Nope.
All right, coming up, Stems and Seeds before we get out of here, including Longhorn baseball, getting ready for that big series with West Virginia. And today, looks like they're definitely getting that game in. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
This the year the blacksmith. Tyler Kwali. Kwali. K-1. Back in the days, we all used to listen. Now it's so whack, nobody listen to that real hip-hop, yo. Ladies and gentlemen, get ready, here comes Tyler.
Rounding it out with Talib Kweli. He was the subject of the partial interview we played for you earlier. Trey got to interview him. And it is out there, booksonpod.com. And you heard part of the interview, but the full one is still out there, Trey. And the book is out there for people.
That's right. Vibrate Higher is the name of the book. Check out the full conversation at booksonpod.com. That episode is out there as of this morning. We release new episodes every Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we're actually relaunching the website coming up next week, making it easier for you to find authors, books, and subjects that you want to hear from on the podcast, Chad.
That is high-level rap right there. If you have not heard Talib Kweli, he does really good, really good work. All right, before we get out of here, I've got a few things to hit. Let's go Stems and Seeds.
No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. Texas baseball in West Virginia, 6:30, first pitch tonight. It's a 6:15 pregame. Man, if the weather could just stay like it is right now all weekend long, that'd be great. Ty Madden on the hill, and here's your qualification that Craig Way let me in on earlier. They cannot play Sunday. Let's realize that as we go into the weekend. They play Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You have 72 hours to complete your series once you start it. They have till midnight Saturday. There is no such thing as play on Sunday this weekend. So that's what Texas and West Virginia are dealing with. Ty Madden on the hill, as I mentioned. Also, Trey, a congrats to Sam Ellinger. He signed with the Indianapolis Colts. The full deal could be a little over $3.8 million, and he got $130,000 just for signing his name. That's pretty cool.
Yes, it is. Congratulations to Sam Ellinger on getting to sign that deal. Now, this guy is not currently in the Colts division. It's possible he ends up there. How about the Atlanta Falcons looking to trade Julio Jones? They finally acquired too many wide receivers, Chad, and realized that they needed to get rid of one of their stallions.
That took a while.
And according to Jeff Schultz of The Athletic, who detailed why the Falcons are trading Jones over some of their other options, He says that the most likely landing spots for the 32-year-old receiver and his $15.5 million salary includes the Baltimore Ravens, who are looking to add more pieces.
Speaking of collectors of receivers.
San Francisco, which could make sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The Patriots.
Of course.
The Colts.
Aha!
The L.A. Chargers and the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, I like all those ideas.
Yeah.
None of those really sound like a bad idea. Julio Jones is 32?
I know. That surprised me.
Come on, man. That's just going to make me feel old. We talked about Tim Tebow, of course, signing with Jacksonville. He's going to be a tight end. Tonight in the NBA, it is Indiana and Washington, 7 o'clock on TNT. The winner will be your 8 seed and take on Philly. I hope it's Russell Westbrook and Washington, but I'll be honest, I don't know if they're a better team. I don't know if they're the best team to really challenge Philadelphia. We will see. Also, Trey, we knew yesterday, you mentioned this yesterday, Big 12 Media Days have been announced for July 14th and 15th, a Wednesday and a Thursday. We know what teams on what days. Day one, Iowa State, K-State, Oklahoma, TCU, West Virginia. Day two, the rest, Baylor, Kansas, Oklahoma State, Texas, and Texas Tech. So they're going to let the Longhorns hold down a day by themselves, because the brand can do that, and then they're going to put Iowa State and Oklahoma on the same day. So Campbell and Riley will be highlighting day number one.
I kind of wish they would put all the best teams on one day, but then again, I guess you would have a lot of media types showing up for a single day versus both.
That is correct. That's exactly why they do that. Yeah, and I'll say that, you know, you got those two teams, Iowa State and Oklahoma, but also TCU. It's always a team to look out for and at least respect on some level going in. Gary Patterson's always fun to check out at a media day. So that has been announced for Big 12 Media Days coming up in July. Let's cross our fingers that it is full power and the media gets to go. We may even take some shows up there ourselves and try to make it work.
I'll be in Colorado, so good luck with that, guys. We talked a little bit earlier in today's show about Tim Tebow officially signing his deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Adam Schefter got a comment from Tebow about signing to make a return to the NFL. According to Schefter, Tebow told those around him that he knows the challenge that is ahead of him, and as usual, he embraces it.
Yeah.
Nothing shocking there.
He's ready to go. It's a fascinating thing. I don't know if I've ever heard of this idea, because I think even if like LeBron James had stopped in the middle of his career and decided to be a tight end, I think he did some of that earlier in his life. I think he played football at some point. Tim Tebow has played football, obviously, but he's never done that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fascinated to see what happens. Apparently, it's an 85 jersey if you want to buy it. At the PGA, Spieth still even par through six, and the lead is at -3. So keep your eyes on that one. We'll be talking about that tomorrow. Get into a Friday show as we head towards a busy weekend. Lots of stuff going on. Thanks to Rodney Rodriguez for joining us. Remember, you get that extended NASCAR coverage this week with Revved Up ATX Saturday at 11 in the morning, and then Sunday special time at 12, leading you up to that 1:30 cup start. We'll hope the rain holds off for the folks out at COTA as well, just like baseball and softball. Baseball pregame at 6:15 with Texas and West Virginia. Big time series. Longhorns looking for that conference title. Triple option is next. See ya.